Foundation for Public Broadcasting.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Well, coming up, can scientists develop a method to reduce the destructive power of hurricanes? We're going to talk with an award-winning environmental journalist about research into taming hurricanes in just a moment. Later, we'll look at what happened when a white supremacist spoke on the campus of the University of Florida yesterday. And there's that ongoing war of words between the White House and a South Florida congresswoman over President Trump's sensitivity to Gold Star families. We'll hear from both sides on that. But first, two listener comments about yesterday's show, on which we discussed the conflict between President Trump and the South Florida congresswoman over his call to the grieving widow of a soldier killed in Niger. And yesterday we discussed white supremacist Richard Spencer's pending visit to Gainesville. Here's what two listeners had to say.
Just a thought on our president with his different tweets and the way he had the phone conversation with the widow of our servicemen. Could be a theory that he does these things to keep people's attention on the ridiculousness of his tweets while his policies gut environment and our tax code and everything else to move his agenda along. So look at all the tweets he does and then disregard and don't pay attention to the real policy changes. Just a thought.
Hello, this is Kevin from Bradenton calling in regards to the Richard Spencer speech that's going on today. And, you know, I just wanted to remind people what the alt-right followers were chanting in Charlottesville, blood and soil, Jews will not replace us. And interesting to me that the POTUS said that there were some very fine people. So he must agree that what they were saying, he was fine with that. And I also just wanted to mention that it seems like the alt-right, while it might be a small minority of people, seems to have the largest bullhorn going since they've got InfoWars, Breitbart, Fox News, and people like Milo Yiannopoulos, Ann Coulter, and Spencer all can spew the same type of hate speech, and they get amplified because of the people that pay them, keep them on the airwaves. And I think that there's more of us than there are of them. And let's just hope that nothing bad goes down up there in Gainesville today. Thank you.
Well, there you have some listener comments that came in after yesterday's program. Well, this summer, we witnessed the destructive power of hurricanes in Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands, Southeast Texas, and Florida. Our next guest, Cynthia Barnett, has written a new article for National Geographic and is the author of a terrific book called Rain. She's looking at whether what scientists are doing to try to reduce the power of hurricanes. Is it possible to reduce the destructive power of hurricanes? Cynthia Barnett joins us on the phone right now from Gainesville. Hey, Cynthia, how are you? Welcome back.
Hey, Rob, I'm fine. Thanks for having me on. Your caller just used the word amplify, which is interesting because I use the word amplify in my hurricane story. Climate change is amplifying the impacts of hurricanes, and our political tenor is amplifying the voices of white supremacists. So that was kind of an interesting word to start with.
Well, we're going to get to hurricanes in a moment, but first I've got to ask you, you're in Gainesville. Did you observe anything yesterday when Richard Spencer came to speak on the campus?
Oh, well, I observed a great outpouring of love all over the community. And I mean, that is what was really wonderful to watch yesterday. There's actually a lot of disagreement in Gainesville, there has been, and at the University of Florida campus, about how to respond to Richard Spencer. Some faculty and the president felt that he shouldn't receive the publicity and the protest. They described that as oxygen he thrives on. And others, including historians of Nazi Germany, warned that silence was the wrong path. But I think the neat thing that we saw is everyone doing what they felt best at and what they felt they should do. So everything from school kids had all of these chalk messages on the sidewalks about inclusion and diversity. You saw the protests on the news. Lots of people decided to tackle this in other ways and in more quiet ways. But I don't think we saw any silence. There was just a lot of energy and a lot of love. So, you know, luckily nothing really bad happened, although Gainesville Police Department has called a press conference for 1 o'clock today on some charges filed related to a gunshot after the event. So it looks like they've arrested 3 white supremacists. So I don't know all the details of that. Like I said, there is a press conference at 1 o'clock today, but I think overall the community really, you know, shouted down this message of white supremacy in a lot of different kinds of ways.
From what I read and from what I watched on television, it looked like the Gainesville community was pretty united. There were just a few supporters of Spencer there in Gainesville yesterday.
Yes, like I said, there was a great uniting against Spencer. The division had been occurring over the past couple of weeks between those who felt protesting draws more attention to him and from those who felt that it was really vital to protest. So that's been kind of an interesting internal argument to watch. But in the end, you know, everyone sort of came together in different ways. So, for example, a sorority house hired an airplane to fly overhead with a banner that read, "Love conquers hate, love will prevail." So those may have been people who were not at the protest, but they took their own action. And again, that was kind of the beauty of the day.
Well, Cynthia, thanks for that report about what happened with Spencer yesterday. So I've got to ask you, you wrote this great book called Rain, A Natural and Cultural History, and now you've got this article in National Geographic headlined, "Can We Engineer a Way to Stop a Hurricane?" Let me ask you, you've looked at this. How long have people been trying to manipulate the weather, and how far back does that go?
Oh, my gosh. Rob, people have been wanting to control or manipulate the weather since the earliest days of humanity. So in Mesopotamia, the very first god ever worshipped by humans was the god of storms. So we always wanted to manipulate the weather. That is a great dream of humanity, and it sort of repeated itself in all different ways. But now that we have the sophisticated scientific technology we have, it sort of becomes a more interesting question. And specifically, I looked into technologies that would try to reduce ocean temperature as a way to try and lessen the impacts of hurricanes or lessen the blows. You know, the question being, if humanity has managed to warm the planet, including the oceans, giving rise to more severe hurricanes, does it come to follow that we could also cool the seas? And, you know, some people, some scientists think that we can, but as you read in the story, many others are worried, very worried about that.
Well, I guess it's a two-sided sword. Let me ask you about, in your book, Rain, A Natural and Cultural History, there's an incident that begins at MacDill Air Force Base in which some people way back in the 1940s tried to have an impact on a hurricane. Could you tell that story?
Yeah, sure. So this was fascinating. In the 1940s, the federal government and General Electric Corporation were working together on an early weather modification experiment called Project Cirrus. And this was the early technology that led to cloud seeding. In fact, it is fictionalized in one of Kurt Vonnegut's books, Cat's Cradle, if you're familiar with that book. So the military and GE are working together on cloud seeding, starting with silver iodide, and then they decide to try and see if it could work to break a hurricane. And yes, the U.S. military pilots fly out of MacDill Air Force Base. This is in 1947. There had been a hurricane that came ashore in Cape Sable in South Florida, caused a lot of flooding in South Florida, and then popped out the Atlantic side and was sort of hovering offshore in Jacksonville. And it turns out to be a pretty bad idea. The Navy and GE decide that they'll just kind of rush in and see what will happen if they drop a couple of hundred pounds of dry ice into this hurricane. And they did it. And the Navy pilot, it's really interesting to read what he wrote, what he observed. He witnessed what he described as a profound modification in the look of the clouds. And the next day, the storm changed direction and barreled into Georgia's Tybee Island. And there was a person killed in that hurricane. It caused a lot of destruction in Savannah. And there was great argument later about whether the hurricane would have turned anyway or the dry ice turned the hurricane. But what almost all hurricane researchers agreed upon was that it was really premature for them to carry out that experiment at that moment, because it really kind of put off hurricane research for a while. GE gave up weather modification research altogether when the lawyers saw what happened with the hurricane. They said, we're not doing this anymore. We're shutting this down. And they actually put all the patents related to weather modification in the public domain so that the company wouldn't be held liable if any, you know, real disasters were ever attributed to its weather modification. So that was sort of the first really dramatic story of an attempt at hurricane modification in the United States. But it's gone on in the years since then, never that dramatically.
All right, I want to bring us up to date. Cynthia Barnett is with us, and she's written two great items. One is a book, Rain, A Natural and Cultural History, and the other is a brand new article on the National Geographic website called Can We Engineer a Way to Stop a Hurricane? Cynthia Barnett is an award-winning environmental journalist. She lives in Gainesville. So basically, the task for scientists now is to figure out, if we're going to control hurricanes, how to cool either the ocean or cool the hurricane. Is that right?
Well, there have been many wild ideas for stopping hurricanes over time. And I talked to some of the inventors about some of these other ideas, too. So, you know, nuking them, covering the sea with a film to stop the evaporation that feeds their intensity. But what I decided to focus on, because this does seem to be the focus of the scientists that work on geoengineering, I focused on the idea of cooling the sea, the birthplace of hurricanes, you know, between Africa and the Caribbean, this path where they're born. And the issue that's happening now is that climate change is amplifying the risks of hurricanes. So the climate scientists say it's not that we will see more hurricanes, it's that their risks could be amplified because the ocean needs to be at about 80 degrees or higher to form a Category 4 or 5 storm. So the idea of some of the geoengineers is, could we lower the sea surface temperatures just enough so that they will not become that large? And, you know, it sounds deceptively simple, and I think it is deceptively simple.
Well, there's four ideas that you talk about, four possible ways that scientists are thinking about cooling the waters. What are the four ways that they're thinking about?
So one of the ways is called marine cloud brightening. And this is the idea that the whiter the whiter a cloud is, the more sunlight it will reflect back, and that will cool the sea below. So this is sort of a long time, couple of decade long dream for cooling the planet in general. So the bigger conversation here, Rob, is that there are geoengineering scientists who are thinking about, if we can't come together to lower our carbon emissions and halt the warming that is harming the planet and humanity, would there be a way to geoengineer the whole planet? So that's kind of the umbrella conversation. So as part of that conversation, people are starting to talk about regional geoengineering. In other words, could we save a specific iceberg? Could we save a specific coral reef? Could we lower the potential energy going into a hurricane by cooling the sea? So this is one kind of geoengineering. And the one that seems to be getting the most traction is called marine cloud brightening. It was proposed a couple of decades ago by a cloud physicist. And the idea is that if you could infuse clouds with wee particles, you could whiten the clouds and cool the sea below. So I interviewed scientists in the UK who have been working on this for quite a while, and they would like to do an experiment. They would like to go out and start applying the seas with spray, applying the clouds with spray starting in about November so that they could cool off the sea by the time hurricane season rolls around. So they've got a whole plan for doing this.
And the idea is that by having more white clouds, the whiter clouds, more of the sun's rays will be reflected back into space.
That's right. That's right. And that is, again, there's a larger argument being made that, could that work across the whole planet? Could we essentially shade the sun to make the planet a little cooler?
Okay, so that's one idea, marine cloud brightening. Now another idea is to actually make the surface of the sea itself whiter. Did I read that right?
Right. So this is a Harvard physicist. Russell Seitz has been working on an invention called bright water that would cool the seas by lightening the seas. So, and his work is interesting too, because all of these technologies have smaller applications. Like maybe they could be used for something smaller before we try to manipulate a hurricane. So, Professor Seitz's research, bright water, could also possibly be used to help keep water from evaporating from reservoirs during drought. So his idea is to start smaller and work to cool water in reservoirs and farm ponds in drought-ridden places around the world. To see if it works. And then if it works in an application like that, perhaps it could work to cool ocean water to make hurricanes less severe. And, I mean, the danger of me talking about this in this sort of normal way and also writing about it this way is that I don't want to take away from, some of our primary hurricane scientists, such as Dr. Frank Marks, who's director of hurricane research at National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration in Miami. You know, he talks about how dangerous these ideas are. First of all, he doesn't think they will work. But more importantly, he thinks that they are dangerous and that a hurricane is not a regional event. You know, as I mentioned, some of the geoengineers are saying, can we carry out these technologies regionally to solve smaller problems? And Dr. Marks is saying, wait a minute, a hurricane is not a local phenomenon. It's really a part of the global atmosphere. And if we could change it in some way, that the job of the hurricane, which is to move that heat out of the ocean, that heat still has to go somewhere. All the energy has to go somewhere. So that job will get done in the atmosphere and in nature, which means it could have negative impacts in some other part of the world or even on us. So, I think it's important to have the conversation, and it's fascinating. I think it's fascinating to be curious about it, but to not be gullible about it.
Sort of like, I guess, the promises made by atomic energy way back in the 40s and 50s is that people thought that there would be an endless supply of electricity without any consequences, but we know that there are problems associated with it.
So that's a really perfect analogy. And it's, you know, when you cover the environment and water, as I have for so many years, I guess the lesson that stands out more than any other is that everything we do, every action we take, everything we put out into the world, it comes back to us somehow, right? So that's been the case with our carbon emissions. It's the case with any pollution we put out into the world. I mean, it even comes back to us in the rain. Scientists detect higher levels of nitrates in the rain now. So every action that we take will have some reaction. So, you know, the smarter, better way going forward is to try and prevent future warming, to keep people safe, to keep investing in the forecasting technologies that help us know when hurricanes are coming and help us evacuate and all of that.
Yeah, we talked about marine cloud brightening, and you talked about sea salt possibly being sprayed in the atmosphere. And just to getting to some of these other ideas about how to cool the ocean, one of the ideas is to pump sulfates or some other aerosol into the clouds to make them brighter, too. That's part of the marine cloud brightening idea?
Yes, sulfates.
What are sulfates?
Right. So this is a bigger picture. These are substances that geoengineers are looking at to blast into the skies on a more global basis to try to cool the planet. So the idea is to replicate the action of a volcano. We know that times in the past when there have been major volcanic eruptions and sulfates have gone into the atmosphere, that's had a cooling effect. If it's large enough, it can have a cooling effect on the whole planet. So again, this idea is, could we do this in a man-made way to cool the planet? And the geoengineers who are working on this, they're not chomping at the bit to do this. They really look at it. The metaphor they use is chemotherapy. These are plan Bs for society. If we cannot get our act together and if climate change becomes, you know, an epic disaster, if we really need to turn to some other way of cooling the planet, it would be better to have researched these ideas and have them, you know, and understand their impacts, know what could happen, than to just have a knee-jerk reaction if things start falling apart. So it's all very theoretical, but they make the argument that these are things we have in the back pocket in case we need them. So that is the case. You know, it's the case with all of this stuff, whether sulfates or marine cloud brightening or other ideas.
I always think of sulfates are in wine, and I think some people are allergic to sulfates. So I don't know if it would be the same kind of sulfates used. But
I don't know the answer to that. We have to get one of these geoengineering scientists on air. It's a really, you know, it's a fascinating field. It's a frightening thing to think about. And then again, we humans have managed to change the entire global atmosphere we're making the planet warmer. So, you know, again, their argument is that at least we should do the research so we know whether it's possible.
Well, Cynthia Barnett, our guest, writes about the upside and downside of engineering hurricanes. Can we reduce the temperature either of the ocean or inside the hurricane? And she wrote, can we engineer a way to stop a hurricane for the National Geographic website? You can find it online. And also, she's written a great book called Rain, A Natural and Cultural History. Cynthia Barnett is an award-winning environmental journalist from Gainesville. Cynthia, one last method. I know I'm concentrating on the positive side, and you're trying to hold me back and say, wait a minute, there could be a big downside. I hear that. But one other way that they're talking about is to take the very cold water from the very bottom depths of the ocean and try to raise it up. Is that right?
Yes, so that too has been an idea in the works for a couple of decades, originally conceived by a wave energy expert in the UK named Stephen Salter, and it's been the subject of a lot of attention, especially in the wake of Hurricane Sandy. Seattle-based Intellectual Ventures invested in this technology. Bill Gates is invested in this technology. I interviewed Ken Caldera at the Carnegie Institution for Science at Stanford, who is working on this technology. So it started as these giant rings that would float out in hurricane-prone places like the Gulf of Mexico and use wave energy to blend the deeper water with the surface water to cool off that surface water a little bit. There were various problems with those rings, you know, floating about unmoored in the stormy seas. So the technology has evolved, and they're talking now about these vessels. They sort of look like bathtubs almost that could float out and be moored and use pumps to pump the seawater up and down, say in the Gulf, again trying to cool the surface water. So like with the other technologies, there's a smaller application that's being studied, and that is whether this same technology could help decrease the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. So could that mixing of the top water and the deep water help reduce the dead zone and some of the other problems that are happening in the Gulf. Now, of course, the problem is there are all kinds of creatures and life living in the deep waters of the Gulf of Mexico who like the temperature just as it is. Thank you very much. Right? That's how they live. And so, you know, a lot of this has real implications for marine life, much less humans if something goes wrong. But again, you know, their point is let's work on this, let's model it, let's spend some of our research dollars to see if these things are possible, and maybe we could also have an impact on pollution in a place like the Gulf of Mexico that is, you know, just suffering these worsening dead zones.
Our guest Cynthia Barnett wrote this article, Can We Engineer a Way to Stop a Hurricane, for the National Geographic website, nationalgeographic.com. And she looks at the ways that scientists are thinking about cooling the oceans, but also she asks the question, what could possibly go wrong? It's fascinating. Cynthia, do you think we're past the point of no return? Bill McKibben, who is the environmentalist, says that we've already put maybe too much carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, that it would be impossible to go back now.
I don't think we're past the point of no return, Rob. I think this is all actionable science. And I know the most about rainfall. You know, they say, and you know, we've all been dealing with these extreme rains. The scientists say that for every degree the planet warms, rains will get about 10% more extreme around the world. These are all things that we know. These are all things that we know, and they're all things that we can work on together. And I think if we would come together and tackle this problem in the way we've tackled other major environmental problems over the course of modern times, I really think it would be possible to prevent future human misery. We can certainly prevent a lot of misery, but at the rate, I would say at the rate we're going, when we don't, you know, we have leadership that is not even believes in the science of climate change. I mean, that is so backwards. It feels as if we're back to the medieval ages. You know, I wrote about the witchcraft weather trials in my book, and it's feeling like those days. I think if we could get back into these times of, you know, at least working on science, investing in science, we would really be better off, and we could have a lot more optimism about this issue.
Cynthia Barnett, thanks a lot for coming on WMNF. Great to have you here.
Great to talk with you, Rob. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Cynthia. Bye-bye. That's Cynthia Barnett, who is the author of a new piece on the NationalGeographic.com website, Can We Engineer a Way to Stop a Hurricane? And she also asked the question at the very end, what could possibly go wrong? So it's kind of a two-sided article, very interesting, about scientists trying to reduce the power of hurricanes. Cynthia is an award-winning environmental journalist. She lives in Gainesville, and her most recent book is Rain, A Natural and Cultural History. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. We're going to switch gears a little bit and talk about what happened yesterday. A lot happened. We're going to talk about what happened in Gainesville. We heard Cynthia's account of what went on in Gainesville. We're going to start with the dispute between the White House and a South Florida congresswoman. White House Chief of Staff John Kelly is defending Donald Trump against a congresswoman's accusations that the president was insensitive to and disrespecting to a grieving military family from South Florida. Here's the way the AP reported it this morning.
John Kelly, the retired Marine general and Gold Star father who serves as White House Chief of Staff, says he was brokenhearted when he heard a Florida congresswoman's characterization of the condolence call the president made to the widow of a soldier killed in Niger.
It stuns me that a member of Congress would have listened in on that conversation.
Kelly said Trump was trying to tell Maisha Johnson her husband was doing what he wanted to do when his life was taken. He did not address the president's claim he reaches out more than his predecessors did. Kelly said he did not get a call from the White House when his son was killed in Afghanistan, but he says the only calls that really matter are the ones from a fallen soldier's colleagues. I'm Warren Levinson.
Meantime, Congresswoman Wilson responded to Kelly this morning. She was on CNN, and she was questioned by CNN's Allison Camerota.
Well, his point was, I think, that, and though you're right, he didn't get the facts right on that, was that empty barrels make the most noise. And he was using that, he was likening that to you. Basically, that
I think that's a racist term, too. I'm thinking about that when we looked it up in the dictionary because I had never heard of an empty barrel. And I don't like to be dragged into something like that.
General Kelly also said yesterday that he was absolutely stunned by your reaction, knowing from where he sits what the president intended, that he was stunned that you had misinterpreted it, according to him, and that he was stunned. He said he was also stunned that you would have listened in on that call because to him, those calls are sacred. Can you respond to that?
I wasn't listening in. I was in a car where a call was being taken on a speakerphone. I wasn't listening in. Please don't characterize it as that. And I still go back to what I said from the beginning. Call her by her name, Maisha Johnson. Call him by his name, Sergeant LaDavid Johnson. He is not her guy. He is her husband. And that is the part that hurt her the most.
That's Congresswoman Frederica Wilson this morning on CNN. John Kelly, the president's chief of staff, had called her an empty barrel yesterday, had called the congresswoman an empty barrel yesterday. Well, the Associated Press looked into all the families of all the 43 people who've died in military service since January, since Trump became president, and talked with about half of them. Of those who would address the question, relatives of nine said that they had heard from President Trump by phone or mail, and relatives of nine others said that they had not heard anything from the president. So we could talk about that. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Our email address, dj@wmnf.org. Counter-demonstrators greatly outnumbered white nationalist Richard Spencer's supporters yesterday on the campus of the University of Florida in Gainesville. Their chants at times drowned Spencer out during his speech. Here's a part of what Spencer said first, what he told reporters, and later we'll hear just a short excerpt of his speech.
Not everyone in the alt-right even agrees with my concept of the ethnostate, but I would say that effectively everyone in the alt-right agrees with the notion that a racially or ethnically defined state, a nation state, is justified, that it doesn't need to apologize for itself.
You are at the premier event for the question of free speech in this country. You all know that. And this is how you behave. Nazis have no right to speech? Really?
Richard Spencer, part of what he had to say yesterday on the campus of the University of Florida. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Former President George W. Bush yesterday came out denouncing bigotry during the Trump administration, warning that the rise of nativism, isolationism, and conspiracy theories have clouded the nation's true identity.
Our identity as a nation, unlike many other nations, is not determined by geography or ethnicity, by soil or blood. Being an American involves the embrace of high ideals and civic responsibility. People of every race, religion, ethnicity can be fully and equally American. It means that bigotry or white supremacy in any form is blasphemy against the American creed.
President George W. Bush, just part of a pretty powerful speech that he made yesterday. Former President Obama, too, is bemoaning the rise of racial politics. He made a couple of speeches yesterday. Here's just a short excerpt.
Obama did not mention President Trump by name, but he did urge supporters to send a message to America and the world by voting Democrats into office.
We are rejecting a politics of division.
Yes. Yes.
We are rejecting a politics of fear.
He also told the crowd in Newark the world counts on America to have its act together and to set an example.
Some of the politics we see now, we thought we put that to bed.
Obama went on to say it's the 21st century, not the 19th. I'm Julie Walker.
That, of course, was an AP reporter reporting on President Obama yesterday. Finally, a month after Hurricane Maria devastated Puerto Rico, power is still out for the vast majority of people as the work to restore hundreds of miles of transmission lines and water lines goes on. It is a very slow process. Yesterday, President Trump was asked what grade he would give himself for dealing with the devastation in Puerto Rico.
I'd say it was a 10. I'd say it was probably the most difficult when you talk about relief, when you talk about search, when you talk about all of the different levels, and even when you talk about lives saved.
President Trump giving himself a 10 about Puerto Rico. What do you think? 813-239-9663. And you can also email us here in the studio, our address, dj@wmnf.org. And let's go to Frank in Largo first. Frank, you're on. What would you like to comment about?
About the global warming issue, I was just looking at a report from the European Commission Joint Research Center. Apparently, global CO2 emissions have stalled for the third year in a row. That's good news, isn't it?
Yeah, Frank, I think that's been discounted, and I think you're not really looking at, I think you're probably looking through a filter of some right-wing website, because I don't think that's...
Oh, really? Who discounted it?
Give us the URL for what you're reading.
I'll tell you what.
Frank, give us the URL for what you're reading. Frank, give us the URL for what you're reading.
Coming right up. Hold on.
Okay, all right.
Hold your horses there, Rob.
Okay, Frank. Because I, you know, Frank.
Are you ready? Are you ready, Rob?
I'm ready.
HTTP.
All right.
:// edgar.jrc.ec.europa.eu/booklet2017/CO2.
And what is Edgar JRC?
Well, that is the PDF URL for the report from the European Commission Joint Research Center.
Okay. Well, I will look it up.
Oh, and did you know that the deserts are greening too, Rob?
You know, Frank, I don't believe right-wing websites. I'm so sorry. I mean, I do believe scientists, but, you know, I don't believe far right-wing conspiracy theories. But Frank, thanks a lot.
Hey, thanks for cutting me off, Rob.
I didn't cut you off. Thanks, Frank. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Jim and Ruskin. Hi, Jim. You're on. What would you like to say?
Yeah, hi, Rob. Just one thing about, Trump's speeches. He never comes out and says that he's a bigot. But his actions speak louder than words. And some of his words, his actions in Puerto Rico. The native Puerto Ricans are brown people. And he doesn't really seem to care about brown people anywhere. You know, not here, not in the other part of the United States, Virgin Islands. He thought they had a president, which really he's the president. But anyway, that's all I have to say. Have a good day, bro.
All right, Jim. Thanks a lot. And let's take some more phone calls. The fun and frivolity continues. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Danny in Tampa. Hi, Danny. You're on.
Hey, Rob, is Frank trying to give us some fake news there, just like Trump? I mean, and his right-wing website's amazing. The point is that Kelly came out, and he did, with all due respect to Kelly and the loss of his son and everything, he came out and he did damage control. I don't understand why these people have to just go ahead and just lie for Trump all the time. He's better than that, I think. But then to sit there and call her an empty bottle, which now she says is a racist term, I don't know about that. Didn't even call her by her name, and then said that she had the audacity to listen in to this conversation. Well, I'll tell you what, she was invited in the car. She knows this kid from way back. She was his principal in school. She was like, as close as she can get to this guy and the family. And I'd believe her before I believe Trump any day of the week. And Trump said they'd have proof again. Again, he comes up with nothing, as usual. The spying, he can go on and on and on throughout his 9 months, whatever it is that he's been in there, these dreadful months, that he comes up with nothing. Just more lies and more lies.
Hey, Danny.
I think it's just awful the way this guy's going out there and just very insensitive to sit there. There's a way of saying, your son signed up for this, you can make it sound like, your loss is, but he didn't, he has no tact, he has no empathy, I believe that he did say, by the way, your son signed up for it.
You know, Danny, I think you're right, too, when the president says he has proof and he has not offered that proof to us about, his conflict with Congressman Wilson. But I want to ask you this. If I were to call you an empty barrel right now, what would you think I was saying to you?
Well, I hope you wouldn't be alluding to my stomach, that's for sure.
But would you think it was a kind way to refer to you?
No, I think it would be, it's like an empty barrel. Like, in other words, this person is not even worth it. It's like an empty barrel. There's nothing to this person, just completely empty and devoid of being anything even human.
All right, Danny, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Rob.
All right, 813-239-9663. Now, here's a different view. Kevin writes this. From Avon Park, he says, I certainly will not defend our clueless president or John Kelly, but how on earth is empty barrel racist? I didn't understand that part. Kevin, thanks for your email. And Monkey, I doubt that's his real name. Oh, it's actually Chip. Monkey says, or Chip Monkey says, the guy who gave us George Bush, you're either with us or against us, talking about political divisiveness. How ironic that is, writes Chip. And here's somebody from the 813 area code says, in reality, everyone is brown. In fantasy, there is black, white, red, yellow people. Get real. Get over it, writes 813. So 813, thank you for that. Let's go back to the phones, and we're going to go to Jillian, who's in Tampa. Hi, Jillian. You're on. What would you like to say?
Hi. I was actually calling based on kind of our opinions about what was going on in Puerto Rico. And I'm from there. I have a lot of family there. So for Trump to give himself a 10, that's pretty wild. But, I mean, obviously nothing like unexpected from him. But, I mean, I've been in contact with a lot of family. I've been in contact with friends here that have family over there. And and a lot of the devastation has not been cleared, so many people have not been helped. As far as saving lives, I have family that work in hospitals, and there are hundreds of people dying on a daily basis because they have no power, but also like the stenches in the hospital are crazy from what they say. There's so many sickness outbreaks because of the humidity and the dampness, because it keeps raining, everything is wet, and nothing is necessarily being cleared, so that's attracting a bunch of mosquitoes, which mosquitoes are like the deadliest animals.
Yeah. Jillian, yeah, so we don't really know
pretty,
the we don't really know the death toll, but do your relatives and does your family in Puerto Rico do they say what they need the most or what would help the most?
They're most of them are kind of in and out with power. Only maybe a couple have running water. My mom actually went and paid a visit of a week long, and everything we were going to mail out, since things are being stolen and packages aren't arriving and stuff, she just took them with her on luggage. And so, I mean, I would say probably water and food is most priority, but the fact that sickness outbreak is pretty intense, anything like, any like medications, antibiotics, cleaning supplies, because since everything in the houses is damp from the humidity and like the constant rain and those houses that have not even gotten cleared yet from like all the flooding and stuff, everything is molding. Mm-hmm. So that within itself, kind of creates like sicknesses and bacteria and things like that. So, I think medical care is probably, really, really important, because they're saying that a lot of people are getting sick. So, and I even have family like in the military that were out there helping and stuff, and they really helped kind of like, more along the northern part where the port was. They were holding a lot of the donations and stuff there, because I guess the American Corps of Engineers and like the military and FEMA, they couldn't really necessarily like come down to like an organizational strategy. So that's why it took so long for so many supplies to get out. And they mainly helped, like I said, like more of like the northern part, kind of like the touristy part of the island, versus like more midland, more south. A lot of, my family haven't gotten any help at all.
And is your family in the north, or where's your family?
No, my family, they're a little scattered. A majority of them are in Ponce, Puerto Rico. So it's more like kind of like the country southeast, I believe.
Mm-hmm. San Juan's in the northeast, and that's where the president was a few days ago. He went to one of the gated communities near San Juan. But he didn't. So the president didn't go
really
to the countryside.
Visit any part that was actually really, really devastated. I mean, the whole island was, and we've even like having been in contact with a lot of family over there. We're trying to get their information because they don't have any power or internet or anything. So we wanted to maybe get their FEMA paperwork and like all the all the online applications and stuff going, and we would put their addresses in, and it would say, like, no, this is not a devastation zone. And we're like, what? Like, the whole island was, you know, like, destroyed. I don't, you know, it's really messy. I mean, I've seen the news, but I've spoken to my family, and I can kind of call all the BS that they're saying on there, like, how much help they've actually sent out. Even though, like, my family sent pictures of like, donations, like, because a lot of donations, they, like, crossed out the barcodes and stuff like that. They were being sold at stores anyway. And so that's, you know, that's pretty scary. I think
stuff definitely was donated, and then the merchants turned around and tried to sell them. Wow. Wow.
Yeah,
hey, Julia, so, I hope you'll call back. I hope your family, hope the recovery goes quickly, but please call us back and give us an update, too.
Definitely. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Julia.
Right, and thank you for talking on this subject, because it's very, very important.
And thank you for raising it.
Have
a
good one.
Thanks, Julian. And you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And let's go to Dan, who's in Seminole. Hi, Dan. What would you like to comment about?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. What's up?
Hey, real quick, first of all, for the definition of empty barrel, watch Lawrence O'Donnell last night. I guess it's a slang term that they used in, like, South Boston area.
Oh, that's right. You're right. John Kelly's from Boston.
Yeah, they're both, like, from the same neighborhood or close, and so they, you know, he kind of gives a good comparison. But what I really wanted to talk about, has anyone heard about the report that the Inuit Indians up and up around the North Pole are noticing that they think that there's been a shift in the Earth's plane? Because they're noticing when they watch the stars all the time, the sun is coming up at a different angle. So have you heard anything about that?
I have not heard that. Well, that should be easy to check. I'm sure there are reporters and interviews with the Inuit that we could check. So
it was on an internet site, and I couldn't tell you what I read last night, but they believe that could be one of the maybe a factor in the global warming, because, you know, the gravitational forces are always shifting. They've not been stable. True North is, you know, all over the place.
Yeah, it's a little off. All right, Dan, thanks a lot. Thanks. All right, so Edward writes this. He says, regarding Trump rating himself a 10, he says, well, 10 on a scale of 1 to 100, Mr. Trump might be correct. And then Ralph says, well, Ralph wants to give us a music announcement. Okay, we'll announce that later. And let's see. Here's somebody says, hi, Rob. You just had on the perfect guest to address conspiracies such as weather manipulation. But as usual, you ridicule and silence the callers. Do you really believe that this will make the conspiracies disappear? Writes somebody from the 813 area code. So 813, thank you for that. 813-239-9663 is our phone number, and Sean writes this from the newsroom, that he'll have an update about Puerto Rican disaster from aid volunteers on the 3:30 news this afternoon. Let's go to Scott in St. Petersburg. Hi, Scott, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. Just talking about our commander in disbelief. You know, the guy just does not deserve any respect from us. He just constantly lies, you know, calling himself a 10. I mean, that means the situation is perfect, and it sounds like it's far from perfect. I think we should all make a concerted effort to not refer to him by his name. He's such a narcissist, and just call him that guy, and everybody will know. You know, that guy today said this, and that guy today said that. And, you know, I just think he doesn't deserve any respect anymore.
All right, Scott, thanks a lot.
You bet.
All right. So what do you think of Scott's idea? Let's go to Daryl, who's in Tampa. Hi, Daryl. You're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. How you doing?
I'm good.
I'd like to say I watched Morning Joe, and I wanted to hear for myself, and they played the speech by General Kelly. And I would like to say that I fully understand where he's coming from. And if anybody knows me, I am not a Donald Trump apologist. Yes, he is a narcissist, and yes, he does not apologize, and coming, things like that, talking to a widow, he would be the very last person I would choose to speak to somebody like that. But let me say this, coming from a family where all of my uncles, they served in the military. And from a World War II standpoint and in Korea, the military right now we know is volunteer. And we know that a lot of the stuff that's going on right now came from when the draft was taken away.
And Daryl, I'm so sorry. We're out of time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
wow.
All right.
Well, I'll call in again.
Okay, thanks, Daryl. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comments back tomorrow, or rather on Monday at 11 o'clock. Stick around because Daniel Ruth is in the next hour. He'll be hosting the Midpoint program, as he always does on a Friday. Have a great weekend. Thanks to Jeff Haynes for being our phone producer today.